This is Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Money and leverage, the only things that matter. Well, in football, actual leverage also matters. And boy, oh boy, did we see that on display last night on Monday Night Football. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And a very exciting day before we get to full-on hitting people on here. In about an hour, we are going to be joined by the new Notre Dame head football coach, Marcus Freeman, on the Goodyear Hotline with us. And Chris Canty is going to watch me fight the urge to completely fangirl.
I'm looking forward to it, though, man. I mean, it's your new head coach. I mean, somebody that everybody around the program is optimistic about. It's your alma mater, so it's near and dear to your heart. So I get it, man. I'm excited about you. I'm excited about your new head coach. I think that program is going to be headed in the right direction in terms of the caretaker. But, you know, I gotta be a little bit selfish in this one. I'm kind of getting concerned about my head coaching search, too, at the University of Virginia. I would like for the University of Virginia to get this business wrapped up as well. So hopefully we could be talking about having both of our new head coaches on the show this week as opposed to just Notre Dame's head coach. Just saying.
Listen, we want this to be a team effort here. Iron sharpens iron, and we want to make sure that above all else, that we're alumni in good standing with our university and their head football coaches here so we can go back and still get let in the building. That's all I'm looking for out of all this. So, again, Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame's new head coach, going to join us in about an hour here on Canty and Golic Jr. But, Chris, we talk so much about the changes in modern football, whether it's in college or the NFL. Time and space, everyone's spreading out. Oh, this is an 11-personnel league. This is a nickel league. Last night, in the middle of a windstorm that almost knocked Adam Schefter out of his chair pregame, we saw the Patriots continue to turn back the clock. Was that one of the most straightforward physical beatdowns you've ever witnessed on a football field?
Yeah, that was pretty bad, man. I mean, it was a situation where everybody knew what was going to happen as far as what Bill Belichick and the Patriots offense was going to do. After that first quarter, it became apparent that they were just going to run the football until the Buffalo Bills defense could stop it, and good on the Patriots for realizing that they couldn't stop it. And we're talking about, for the second time in three games, the Buffalo Bills allowing over 200 yards rushing from an opponent. So that has to be a concern when we start projecting what this Buffalo Bills team is capable of being able to get done, not only with the rest of the regular season, but on into the postseason, knowing the expectations that they have on this team. But for New England, man, it was simple. We're going to put on the neck rolls. We're going to put an extra layer of wrist tape on. We're going to make sure that everybody got their knee braces ready to go. And we're going to go out there and we're going to try to bludgeon the Buffalo Bills. Offensive line, defensive line, we're going to get after it. We're not going to make any excuses for it because we believe we're the tougher team and we're going to impose our will on these guys. And that's exactly how that game played out. Gojo, we're talking about it being 2021 and the New England Patriots only threw three passes and still was able to find a way to win that game and really control the complexion of the game throughout. That was probably the most surprising for me because the Buffalo Bills were the number one defense in the National Football League going into Week 13. They sure didn't look like it last night because they couldn't find a way to be able to slow down the New England Patriots run game.
No, it was a complete physical beatdown of one team toward another. Because you're right, we watched this, and looking at last night, Chris, one of the oldest phrases in football that I love going by, it's an old Joe Moore quote, the offensive line coach. Russ Grimm said it at his Hall of Fame speech. There is no greater feeling than moving a man from point A to point B against his will. And the Patriots lined up with multiple, like six offensive linemen on the field, a fullback in the backfield, and said, we are going to run it directly through you. And we saw the frustration mount after the game, Chris. There's something uniquely satisfying. I don't think there's a lot we can take away from this from the Patriots standpoint when it comes to Mac Jones or anyone else, right? Like, this was three passing attempts. It was rookie, get out of the way and don't mess this up in the windstorm. The men are working over here. And that's exactly what happened because, Chris, you know this as a defensive player. I can't really totally empathize with this because I think when we talk about rushing the football, so much gets made in the analytics world about the value of it here. It is the most personal aspect of football. is the ability to rush the football and be rushed on. Because we saw after the game, and we'll play the sound in a little bit, of Poyer and the other defensive backs for this Buffalo Bills team here. That hurt them in a way that only that kind of physical dominance in that phase of the game can. And I think when we talk about the message the Patriots send, that continues to be it, is even when you know exactly what we're going to do, you can't stop us, and boy, is that scary.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst feeling in football, Mike. I mean, when the opposing team is running the ball, and as a defender, you know they're running it, and they know that you know that they're running it, and yet they're still making the choice to run it, and you can't stop it. That is the worst feeling in football. It's the loneliest feeling in football. That's when you get guys on the defensive side of the ball looking around in the huddle to try to see what the hell is going on and where the ball is running to and who's responsible for that gap. You get a lot of finger pointing when stuff like that starts happening, like we saw that game go sideways for the Bills defense last night. Like, that's where they found themselves in the second half, because they had no answers for it. The only thing that strode down Damian Harris was his own hamstring. Otherwise, he was hitting his head on the goalpost. Like, that's how effective that Patriots run game was going. And the thing that I realized as the game progressed, like, if you continued to watch it, all you had to do was close your eyes, and you could actually hear the physicality that Patriots offense was playing with, because you heard the pads popping with the bobs, the fullbacks coming in and cleaning the holes, the offensive linemen that were pulling around the perimeter to clean up on those linebackers and those defensive backs. Like, they imposed their will on that Buffalo Bills defense, and when you get pushed around like that, you're going to feel a way about it. So there's some soul searching that's happening today in that Buffalo Bills facility, because they found out last night they ain't who they thought they were. They thought that they were going to be the bullies in the division. They swept the New England Patriots last year. They won both regular season matchups. They found themselves in the AFC Championship game. Coming into this year, it was supposed to be a continuation of that. Josh Allen as an MVP candidate and an elite defense, a defensive-minded head coach, and they got punched in the mouth. They test their manhood, they check their oil, and they found out, guess what? The Buffalo Bills, they ain't who they say they are. And the Buffalo Bills found out we're not who we said we are either. And so I think that's where you're starting to see some of the frustrations boil over. And guess what? This is a team that doesn't have a lot of time to lick their wounds, because they got to go down to Tampa Bay next week. And they're playing the Buccaneers. And Tom Brady is 32-3 against the Buffalo Bills. So good luck with that.
That is going to be the struggle, because, man, we talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're the ones I first thought of when we saw this last night, when we saw just how deeply personal this is. Because Bruce Arians, this was Bruce Arians all the way back, I believe, in November 28th in the postgame presser for them. Just listen to the way he talks about the run defense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I mean, nobody runs the ball in us. You know, I don't care who the hell you are. I mean, you're going to end up throwing it, because if you're going to run it all day, you're not going to get much. And they did that last drive. You know, we were a little bit playing pass defense, and they ran it on us. But I'll take our run defense versus anybody's run offense anytime.
It is deeply personal to these guys. So coming up in 30 seconds, that's why I want to get to this, because the amount of salt that came out of last night's loss, the reason I now have very serious concerns about the Buffalo Bills is because of what we heard, a lot of hit dogs hollering in the post-game press conference. We will get to that in about 30 seconds after this word from Wendy's. All right, guys, a better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. That's why Wendy's is serving a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese for just $1. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with fresh cracked egg and cheese on a buttery, flaky biscuit for just $1. So don't risk your biscuit somewhere else. Go to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese for just $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. Be a part of Canny and Golic Jr. Nation. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. That's 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. Bowl season's heating up and the fans are hyped. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Was last night one of the better game plans we've ever seen from Bill Belichick? We want to hear from you, because someone felt some type of way about that. Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott, in the post-game press conference after the Monday Night Football loss, tried to throw a little cold water on that.
Let's not give more credit than we need to give credit to Bill Belichick in this one. Whether it's Bill or anybody else, they beat us. You sit here and you tell me when they start with the average starting, when we start with the average starting field position of the 40-yard line and he starts with the 23-yard line, and I'm rounding up in both cases, and we were 1-for-4 in the red zone and they were 0-for-1 in the red zone, you give me that ahead of time, I'm saying I like my chances. I like my chances. With all due respect, it's not a Bill Belichick type thing. It's what are you doing with the opportunities you got? What are you doing with the opportunities you got? We turn the ball over at the plus 30-some yard line. Sloppy football. Sloppy football. So I'm very comfortable in that situation.
All right, Chris, I'll tell you this. I agree that actually I think a lot of people are overblowing the idea that this is one of the greatest game plans Bill Belichick's put together. It's great because it was simple. You had the things you your team does well in an event where you had 40-mile-an-hour winds, and you said, we'll just do more of those things that already play well to this situation. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, but it takes someone who understands his identity the way Bill Belichick does each and every year with his Patriots team, probably better than any other coach. Sean McDermott probably shouldn't be the one saying that out loud.
Yeah, exactly, because nobody wants to hear that. We all know you're salty about it, and you're not going to give the New England Patriots credit for coming into your building and kicking your teeth in. And I can understand that perspective because Sean McDermott wants to sell to his locker room that we're better than that, and it's not about a fancy game plan designed by the greatest head coach of all time. It's more about the miscues that we had. But to Sean McDermott's point, I would say this. Maybe you need to look at the strategy that you tried to employ in last night's game, too, and accept the level of accountability for your team catching the fade like they did. I mean, in that game, was having the ball first or having the win more important? Like deferring the option that you had at the coin toss as opposed to deciding that you were going to, you know, take the ball at halftime. I don't know if that necessarily ends up being the best decision. And you realize that when Tyler Bass ends up missing that field goal in the fourth quarter after you had first and goal from your own 6-yard line and ended up somehow screwing that up. A Josh Allen sack and then ended up getting a situation where you tried to catch the New England Patriots offside and thinking that you had a free play ends up being an incompletion. So there's plenty of soul searching that Sean McDermott has from a play calling standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, from an X's and O's standpoint that put his team at a disadvantage when it came to accentuating their strengths to put them in position to have success. When you have two red zone possessions in the fourth quarter and you're talking about it being a one possession game, you've got to find a way to be able to come up with some points. And the fact that they didn't, that's got to be probably the most disheartening part about all of this. They had their chances. They didn't capitalize on them. It's the execution of the players, but it's also the head coach and the play calling as well, because there's no way that you don't utilize Josh Allen more as a runner when you look at what he was able to do in comparison to what your running backs did. Josh Allen, 6 carries for 39 yards. Your running backs, 19 carries for 60. I'm just saying you could have utilized Josh Allen as a runner, knowing that that's a dynamic that's hard for defenses, even as great as the Patriots defense is, to account for. The math just doesn't add up. So the fact that Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll didn't do more of that surprised me. It was almost like we were watching the broadcast and Louis Riddick and Brian Greasy were trying to encourage the Buffalo Bills to do that. And they still wouldn't do it. They still didn't get away. The only time we saw that happen is when Josh Allen took it upon himself early in that fourth quarter, when he recognized the Patriots were in two-man coverage and everybody's running with their back turned. Let me go ahead and scramble and pick up this first down and move us closer into the red zone. So I don't understand a lot of the decisions that Sean McDermott made. So to sit here and talk about people praising Bill Belichick after the performance that you had as a head coach, I just think that's the wrong message. It might be the right message, but it's coming from the wrong messenger.
Yeah, you know what, Chris? It is the right message because he is right in the fact that I think we are probably spending too much time praising Bill Belichick instead of just pointing out that this was physical dominance by his football team, that he simplified this. We should spend more time doing what you just mentioned, criticizing Sean McDermott for all this stuff, because all the situations that he mentioned, starting field position, being in the red zone, how do you think people end up in the chance to succeed in those spots? A lot of it tends to go to coaching and the decisions you just described. So Sean McDermott can successfully tilt that attention his way for the decisions he didn't make as opposed to the ones that Bill Belichick did make. Now, where the rubber really meets the road, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, was with what we saw after the game. Because we mentioned, this is deeply personal because this is a division game and because of how the Patriots went about winning this in the Buffalo Bills home stadium. We had this incident after the game. Bill safeties Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Listen to the question and the response here, and we will grade fair or foul. This was the Bills safeties being asked about their performance last night.
It's been over 40 years since the team has won a game running that two times in a game. He's passing that three times. Is that embarrassing?
I mean, what kind
of
question?
Boy, what are we doing, bro?
What kind of question is that?
It's a question. The nation's going to be criticizing you.
I think we gave up 7 points.
Yeah,
14 to 10.
Is that the final score?
We made stops when we had to. They had one big run. I mean, they got good backs. They kept coming back to a couple runs. I mean, I don't know how you want us to answer that question.
That's funny. We'll remember that.
Hey, that was classic Stephen A. Smith. You don't want to make an enemy out of me. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Chris, was that question out of pocket there? You've been in some of these press conference settings before. Was that a bit over the line?
No, that question was borderline, but that reporter got exactly what he was looking for in terms of the reaction from Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. Like, that's what he was looking for them to fly off the handle, to be emotional, to be expressive in that way. And to all of a sudden get up and bounce from the press conference. Like, that reporter got exactly what he was looking for. And to your point, what you said earlier, Hit Dog is going to holler. Like the fact that he asked it in the way that he asked it, talked about them being embarrassed, the way the question was framed, like, they felt embarrassed at that performance. When they said that they got stops when they needed to, that's laughable. Because at no point did they stop the New England Patriots running game. They didn't. The only thing that stopped the New England Patriots running game was Damian Harris deciding that he was going to get hurt or penalties that they might have had to put them behind the sticks. But that was it. The New England Patriots stopped themselves when it came to those possessions. But at no point did the Buffalo Bills control the New England Patriots and force Mac Jones to beat them. They ran the ball 46 times for 222 yards. You tell me where you got timely stops. It didn't happen, bruh. That's revisionist history. What you're making up in your mind did not happen. And here's the problem with that, Gojo. They know it didn't. So when he said that, yeah, he's going to react that way because he realizes that they did get embarrassed. They got beat to sleep by the New England Patriots, a team that decided they were going to be one-dimensional, and that dimension was going to be painful for the Buffalo Bills front seven because that was a 9-on-7 run drill that the New England Patriots executed for 60 minutes. And they ended up getting a dub. And it's been a long time since a team that had three pass attempts went won a game in the National Football League. That's what Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde got on their resume. They got to wear that one. And that's the embarrassment that they felt when they got up and walked away from that press conference.
It honestly is the sinking feeling of dread also. The Patriots ran a QB sneak two straight plays starting on 3rd and 5. That sends a message. All of this is designed to send a message, Chris, because I guarantee in that moment, like you said, the question was borderline, but man, some of this is the cost of doing business. When you put players in a post-game press conference scenario right after emotional, physical games, sometimes this is what's going to happen. Emotions run high. But the reason they do is just as much what happened on that field as is what they know they've got coming up in a couple of weeks, because then they got to go to Foxborough and see this team again. And while it's going to be different, we know there's not going to probably be a windstorm in that game or anything like that. It might not reach these heights. They know those same guys are going to be waiting for them with that same mentality that just went out there and tried them for 60 minutes in that game. So again, the Patriots send a big message, probably to the Bills, probably to the rest of the league in Monday Night Football, and get an impressive win. Coming up next, though, speaking of impressive wins, maybe none more so than what we saw from the Alabama Crimson Tide this weekend, but did it also make one of the players on the field some serious money? We'll get to that next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. This is ESPN Radio.
You just heard from Doug Brown in that SportsCenter update. Marcus Freeman will join the show in a half hour here on Canty and Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, Notre Dame's new head coach. Got to make sure I'm still in good graces around there in South Bend as we transition to a new regime inside the building. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping to discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And Marcus, you and I spent – Mark, you're getting ready for Marcus Freeman already here.
I see that, right?
Man, you can tell I am nervous about having the new head guy on right now. I'm trying to practice here in the middle of the show here. Chris, we spent a lot of time talking about another college football yesterday in the Alabama beatdown of the Georgia Bulldogs. Where do you find yourself on Bryce Young, their quarterback? He's probably going to be the Heisman Trophy winner this season when it's announced. He certainly starred in that game. But as someone that played in the NFL as long as you did, when you look at Bryce Young, his size and everything else that's a part of his game, what do you see as the future on Sunday for him?
Well, I think he's got a bright future, and I love the movement skills. I like his ability to be able to process information in real time. He's got the arm talent, and he's got the touch. I mean, all of the elements are there for him to be a really, really good quarterback at the next level. It's just a matter of him continuing to build on his knowledge base at the collegiate ranks, because we know that there's a big difference when it comes to college-type defenses versus NFL-type defenses, the different schemes, the different pressures that you're going to see. So I just think it's certainly going to be more nuanced in the speed of the game. Absolutely changes. So all of that is going to be, you know, things that Bryce Young has to start trying to understand. He's got to try to hone his craft as much as he can at this level. But I think he's got a really bright future in the NFL. I think he's going to be a talented NFL quarterback one day when he's draft eligible, based on the things that I've seen in this season.
And a reminder, you're right, draft eligibility. He is a redshirt freshman, so he has been in college 2 years. He's got to be in college one more year to be draft eligible. But that didn't stop Mel Kiper Jr., co-host Darian Mel on ESPN Radio here on the weekends, who just put out a new big board for his 2022 NFL draft. Aiden Hutchinson, the defensive end out of Michigan, takes over at the number one spot on his big board, fresh off being invited to the same Heisman Trophy ceremony that Bryce Young is going to be at. Mel Kiper went on radio this weekend and stated what he believes about Bryce Young and how he would fare in this year's class.
He would be the number one player on the board at any position by a significant margin. And at quarterback, it would even be worth discussing because there's no quarterback in his.
So Bryce Young would be the number one player in the draft, the number one draft pick if he was eligible this
by year. A wide margin, in my opinion. He's a quarterback number one. He's a great quarterback, more importantly. In this show today, which we're only an hour plus into, he's drawn comparisons to Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, and Russell Wilson. That tells you all you need to know about Bryce Young.
Chris, we went from him being the question mark before the season to now comparisons to all those names. Just for reference, Kenny Pickett, the quarterback out of Pitt, is the number one ranked quarterback on Mel's big board this year. He checks in at 20th overall on this, and Mel is saying that Bryce would be significantly better. And Chris, I got to be honest, I agree with him. I mean, based on what we saw almost from the jump this year, when Alabama rolled out and started dusting people off from opening week here, what did they play, Miami early in the season?
Yeah.
And you saw the control and poise he had. I went, oh, no, they got another one of these guys that's different. Now, the release isn't quite as fast as Tua or Mac Jones. The ball doesn't come out like that. But, Chris, you know this. For a quarterback, I think one of the most valuable traits that you can have is the ability to be calm when things are breaking down around you. And it hasn't always been perfect in front of him the way it looked this weekend against Georgia. But even when it breaks down here, you have seen his ability to create there. And I think regardless of his stature, that is going to come into question. The rest of that is too valuable, especially now that we've seen smaller quarterbacks make their way to the league.
Yeah, and I was just about to say that, right? In today's NFL, with so many offenses operating out of the shotgun at a higher rate, there'll be opportunities to mitigate, you know, his height and you know, not necessarily being one of the taller quarterbacks in our league. So, yeah, I don't necessarily worry about that as much. The sample size is a little bit of a concern. Bill Parcells used to always say he wanted to have 3 years of tape when it came to evaluating a collegiate quarterback. And it doesn't feel like you're going to have that opportunity with Bryce Young. Now, I get it. He plays in the SEC West, which might be the most competitive division in the most competitive conference in all of college football. But still, just such a small sample size is what has to worry you because, you know, eventually this guy is going to face some adversity. Defenses are going to see what he doesn't do as well and try to throw more looks at him to try to, I guess, minimize what his strengths are. And so I guess that's the thing that I'm waiting to see happen. It hasn't happened as of yet. I think the closest thing we saw was the Iron Bowl against Auburn, and you saw that even in that game he was able to find a way. So I guess the thing is I just want to see more from Bryce Young. But based on everything that I've already seen, like, the kid has got the goods to be a really good football player in the National Football League. How good? I don't know. I'm not going to start putting him in Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson territory just yet, but I mean, from a physical standpoint, he's got all the tools that it takes in order to be a high-end NFL starter.
And, Chris, I can tell you how this is going to go going into next season, because what you mentioned there, the reason that all this praise is being heaped on him is precisely because there were no expectations for him going into this season, right? I think people unusually, because the Alabama quarterback room means something now.
Yeah.
And that's not to say it didn't when Greg McElroy and others were there, but it's different. Now it's first round is the standard in the room that Nick Saban has built really since Lane Kiffin wound up there and started to jetpack this offense here. And it didn't feel like we put those kind of expectations on him to start the season. They're going to be there when he likely walks into next year with the Heisman Trophy. And if we get 3 games into the SEC schedule, and all of a sudden, there's another game that looks like Texas A&M from this year, or there's another game where it's close and there's a struggle, you're going to get people that immediately start to tear him down for the next guy that works his way up the list. What I'm going to remind everyone is, this guy is not going to change much year to year. He's going to continue to improve in a lot of ways, and if it doesn't look like a record-setting yardage performance in the SEC championship, or an Alabama record for touchdown passes, I don't think it necessarily means the player got worse. It just means our expectations are about to go through the roof next year.
Yeah, and it's ultimately about putting your team in the best situation to win games. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be relying on him to throw for over, you know, 300 yards and 4 touchdowns or whatever it is. It doesn't have to look like that each and every week. And keep in mind, Alabama had some injuries in the backfield with their running backs, and so they had to be reliant on Bryce Young for the majority of this season. So, you know, going into next year, if that's not the case, then the offense might look a little bit different. And we know that Nick Saban is going to do whatever it takes to put his team in the best situation in order to get the outcome that they're looking for. So, yeah, just because you might see a decline in the production doesn't mean you don't have improvement from the player. And I think that's what folks have to focus on. But, yeah, as far as how Bryce Young projects to the NFL, like, he's going to be a high, high draft pick whenever he decides to declare. He's going to be a top 10 pick because the kid has that kind of arm talent. He's got that kind of moxie to him. And just based on what we've seen him showing up in big games when it mattered the most, being at his best when his best is required, he checks that box. And that's what a lot of NFL teams are looking for when it comes to who's going to be their future franchise quarterback.
It will be amazing with that in mind to watch how some of the quarterback needy teams that we've talked about address this offseason. If you know, hey, the coveted prize is next year and you got capital, do you see a couple of teams hold pat, keep the status quo for this year, understanding that the big fish might be in that 2023 NFL draft? We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, why we are finally amazed more by something Damian Lillard is doing off the court than on it. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty coming up in about 10 minutes. Marcus Freeman, the new Notre Dame head football coach, will join us here on the Goodyear Hotline. But before we get to that, Chris, did you see this? Adrian Wojnarowski, our ESPN NBA insider, reporting that Damian Lillard wants a 2-year, $107 million extension from Portland. The deal would end up paying him about $55 million at the age of 36. And I can't decide who this deal makes less sense for. Like, we've always looked at Dame and wondered why he doesn't want to finally flee the coop out there. I understand he is loyal to the soil, all those things. But as he nears the twilight, sometimes the perspective can change on what you want out of this. And if you're Portland, who's already got to replace your GM and make some major decisions, is one of them going to be just going and sunsetting, giving that lifetime achievement a contract to Damian Lillard at this point? I just don't know.
Well, I mean, based on the loyalty that he's shown throughout the years with your organization, when he's clearly been one of the best point guards in all of basketball, like, I can understand why Damian Lillard would want that security on the other side of his prime. Like, it just makes sense. After that 2024, 2025 year, like, that's what he wants. He wants to make sure that he's taken care of. This is, in effect, trying to monetize his happiness by being able to get this level of financial commitment from the organization, paying him, what, $51 million and then $55 million in the following season after that on the extension. So I get where he's coming from. And so I think this puts the organization in a spot where they've got to figure out what direction that they're going in, whether this is going to be a turning point and an opportunity for them to rebuild by trying to move Dame for assets, or whether or not they're going to just lock in with Damian Lillard no matter what the state of the team around him ends up being. So I think that's the two choices, the two roads that the Trailblazers have to go down. And then based on what decision that they come to is going to be whether or not they're going to acquiesce to Damian Lillard's demands for an extension in July.
I think this is one Dame's way to ensure that either way he wins, right? Because if you look at what else Adrian Wojnarowski was told, according to sources, among several top-level GM candidates who fit the profile of Portland's applicant pool, there's no enthusiasm to grant Lillard his massive extension through the 26-27 season. In fact, several executives told ESPN they would be far more interested in the Blazers job with owners' blessing to move on from Lillard sooner than later. And I think if you're Dame, by making this offer, you ensure, like you said, if I am going to end up staying here, I am going to be paid handsomely to do so because, man, I've given you a lot. And if not, you make it very clear, I'm only staying for a price. There are no more hometown discounts. And then maybe we finally see the Dame Lillard we have all been clamoring for, the one that would finally leave and give us a little bit of Dame time at a place that might love him back enough to get him to the championship level he deserves.
Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to is an ultimatum from Dame Lillard, right? This is what it is. Like, you're either going to pay me or you're going to trade me, but you know that if they pay him, that's going to be an albatross of a contract that they're not going to be able to move and get assets in return. So it ultimately becomes a lifetime achievement award, and it pretty much guarantees that he's going to retire a Portland Trailblazer, whereas if they make the decision that they're not going to pay him, then he's probably going to be on the move this summer because that's what it's going to ultimately demand. And then the new team that he goes to will have to deal with whatever contract demands that he might have at that point in time. But, yeah, I mean, this is Dame holding the organization's feet to the fire, and I don't blame him because he's been a good soldier in terms of giving that franchise time to be able to put pieces around him so they can do high-level winning. And the fact is, they just haven't been able to get that done. I mean, whether you want to put that on Terry Stotts, whether you want to put that on the front office, that's up to you to determine. But it's clear that there have been organizational failures around Damian Lillard, which has not allowed him the opportunity to put his talents on display on the biggest stage that the game has to offer. And the people that lose out, not only Damian Lillard, but also the fans of the NBA, because he's one of the best players out there in the league right now. He's one of the most fun guys to watch when he's on the top of his game.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. So again, Damian Lillard wants a two-year, $107 million extension. Chris, when it's all said and done, do you ultimately think Damian Lillard winds up being a Portland Trailblazer to finish his career?
No, I don't think it happens. I think because there's so much transition within that franchise, knowing what's going on in their front office, I feel like the new people that are going to be coming in are going to want to move off of Dame, and they're going to look at the assets that they get in return as building block pieces for the future. So I think this is a situation where it's more likely that Dame gets traded than he does get his contract extension. That's just the way I see it, because it just doesn't make sense at this point. You're not contending. You're not doing any high-level winning, so you move off of Dame as an asset, bring assets back in return, and try to rebuild this franchise.
I agree with you completely. I think Dame time is finally up in Portland, not to be too punny in all this. The next question becomes, where does he go, and why is it going to be in New York?
Bing bong!
Because, man, oh, man, if there's a team that wants to pay an aging veteran superstar, my, oh, my, good gosh almighty, it is the New York Knicks.
Oh, yeah, the Knicks will absolutely do it, and that's the position that's a sore spot for them. They're dying for a point guard. The same way somebody would be dying of thirst in the Sahara Desert, that's how the Knicks feel about the point guard spot, man. It's been a really long time since the franchise could feel good about their point guard spot. They got a nice up-and-coming prospect in Emmanuel Quickley, but this is just a guy that's a piece of the puzzle, whereas Dame would be the piece that puts you over the top. And so to be able to pair him with Julius Randle, I just feel like that 1-2 punch automatically puts you in the top four or five teams in the Eastern Conference, no doubt.
This is what it's always been about for the New York Knicks. pulling off that Nets model of building up a culture, getting a lot of guys that can get you to the playoffs, win a lot of games, and then harvesting whatever the hell you need to get a star in there. And it would just be nice and very fitting with what we have seen from the Knicks traditionally if that just happened to be a star towards the end in the twilight of his career. So we will see what happens with Damian Lillard. But coming up next, we got to turn to far more important matters. What is going to happen with the football team at my alma mater of Notre Dame? Coming up next, we will talk to the man at the helm, new head coach Marcus Freeman, joins us next on ESPN Radio.